The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora everybody, and thanks very much for joining me for today's rather unusual episode of Climate Matters. I'm Lindsay Wood, Director of Climate Strategy Company Resilience Limited. And as you know, Climate Matters is brought to you by Fresh FM, the top of the South community access radio station. Well, why is it unusual? Well, today, for the first time, I'm trying to collate the responses of most of the candidates for the local government elections, and they are responding to three questions I sent out. I'm likely to be recording this in several little bites. It's the first time I've done it that way. So I hope that you ride with me through this experiment and that you get something out of it. So anyway, this is how it will work. I will start by just giving you a very quick overview of how it all came together. Then I will summarize some of the key interesting takeaways that I got from the answers. Then we'll go through question by question, each of the three questions, and a bit of a summary of the range of responses we got to each question. Then we will go through, and I will do my best in a series of 30-second clips to do justice to the responses by each of the candidates. And then I'll have a minute each on each of the mayoral responses, if I can manage that time. And then finally, time permitting, I will do a little bit of a wrap-up of it all. So let's try it and see how we go, and hold on to your hat. A couple of weeks ago, I sent out an email to every candidate whose email address was available to me, and there were three questions. I have responses from 18 candidates, and I was pretty pleased with that. And broadly speaking, three of the four mayoral candidates responded. That was great. I was pleased about that. Here are some of the sort of interesting takeaways that I got. There was a terrific range of answers. They ranged from very holistic views, taking into account a lot of different things, right through to candidates who seemed to be almost fixated on one particular issue. There were several surprises in all the answers. And the answers, for example, there were many very interesting and positive comments about the bus service and how to improve that, even from people who didn't seem to be that interested in climate outcomes. They were still interested in making the bus system work. That was pretty cool. A lot of people fell into the classic trap of short-term thinking, especially when it comes to costs. Things like we ought to be doing stuff, but not now. Now's not the right time. Or we've just got to focus on getting our economy right and things. It's a classic trap. There was one mayoral candidate that I thought was head and shoulders above the others. We'll come to that towards the end of the session. There were a few cases of misinformation being circulated, either deliberately or accidentally. I don't know, but we'll come to those. Some of the candidates who had not yet held office at council seemed a little bit confused as to some of the powers that the council has in different areas. I don't think we should hold that against them too much, because every councillor around the table, I'm sure, has been on a learning curve in that area at some stage. It was quite interesting how several candidates, and particularly the more seasoned politicians, didn't take much regard of the questions at all, instead using each one as a chance to push their own messaging. Okay, so much for the broad views of it. Let's have a look at the question-by-question analysis. And the first question was on community engagement and bringing the community along with the climate quest. The second one was on how we could decarbonize transport. And the third one was how we would manage costs in a council budgeting context. So the first question, here it is exactly. Nelson City Council recently adopted a climate change strategy that includes striving to decarbonize the Nelson City area at 8.3% per annum, excluding methane. While challenging, this is still barely sufficient for us to be doing our bit towards the global effort to keep warming to a reasonable level. How do you feel Council might motivate our community and businesses to get on board and strive to meet the target in their own activities? Well, it proved there were lots of different interpretations of the word motivate. Many people thought that it was really to be done by some sort of financial incentive, whether it was making buses free or giving grants for different things. One or two had a really good systems look at it and thought more about the processes of getting the community on board. There were a couple that just said we shouldn't bother and then notably used misinformation to make their case. So whether they were kidding themselves or trying to kid us, I don't know. Then there were also some very interesting holistic views. I was particularly struck that two of the candidates from ethnic minorities presented what I thought were some of the most holistic views of that. That, to me, represented a dimension of other cultures that it would be great to have around the council table. Another interesting dimension was one candidate who said we need to get better at telling stories because that's a way to bring people along. So I like that suggestion. Right, rolling on to question two, which is to do with transport, here was the wording of the question that went to the candidates. Nelson's emissions are dominated by those from transport and on-road transport especially. What action or suite of actions do you think hold real promise of bringing our transport emissions down at a rate commensurate with the 8.3% per annum mentioned in the last question? This proved to be a question that people could get their teeth into a bit, and there were lots of interesting things. One of the standouts for me was the number of candidates that recognised the need for a multi-mode approach, that they wanted to boost buses and active travel infrastructure like cycleways. I think there were also interesting points to do with making public transport more cost-effective than private transport. A couple touched on issues like parking. One, I thought, in fact, I think two, made the very good point that we should really incorporate all the costs of travel as a burden on the user, a sort of polluter pays, so that if you are driving a car emitting fossil fuel emissions that in turn causes serious health problems, that should be costed in, and that sort of costing would make a difference. However, obviously there's more to it than money. One or two talked very much about trying to get community processes where it was a community-driven change rather than a top-down one. Very interesting answers to that, and particularly I like the support for the holistic view, good cycleways, good public transport. Which brings us to question three, and here's the wording that went to the candidates. Some climate actions have significant costs, some modest costs, and some even save money. However, it's widely accepted that the cost of inaction on climate will be vastly more expensive than the cost of effective action. How do you see Council as best facilitating a prudent financial approach towards investment in climate action in our city? This question also elicited a huge range of responses. Predictably, there were a lot of the short-termism ones. We've got to do things later when the economy gets better. Nothing we can do will make a difference. That's awfully, awfully fatalistic. There were some that saw climate action as an investment and some that thought it was not an investment but a tax. I think it depends which side of the fence you're on the worthwhile question of doing anything. Others were very holistic and were of the in the space of saying, make sure that we do things that reinforce each other and have a better combined effect. We get better value for money and better emissions reductions there. A couple were saying, let's not wait for the government. Let's get on and do it and locally, while others said there's no point in doing it locally. We've got to wait for the government and the international community. I think it rather depends whether you're looking for an excuse not to do stuff or whether you're wanting to shoulder responsibility and give it a go. Once efficient emissions are effectively capped and priced, you undertake the activities that save on those costs. So cost saving, almost nobody, with one or two exceptions, said this is a long-term issue. Nearly everybody was talking about costs as though they were just in the short term. There were other people that focused just on engineering works, said, look, we've got to do things like maintaining drains and keeping roads good. Yes, but there's more to it than that. So, you know, you can get a sense of the range of them. The feeling that we were spending too much on the nice-to-haves, either historically or perhaps walkways in parks that didn't seem to be productive. However, I think there's a very wide misunderstanding about the huge cost benefit of having good cycling and active transport infrastructure, typically about 10 to 1. We can talk about that on another episode. Some had great faith in innovators just, you know, rising to the challenge. I hope they're right, but I don't think the evidence is there enough yet. So again, a lot of holistic comments, again, seeing it as an investment that we should look at in the long term. So well done for a whole range of answers there. Now that's my quick take on the responses to the questions. We're now going to have a bit of a look at the individual candidates and what they had to say. I'm going to try and do each one in 30 seconds. I will discuss the candidates just in the chronological order that their answers to me were received. Please remember that my answers are being given in a climate change context. These are not general judgments across all aspects of the candidate. First up was Mike Nichols, who is very much in the don't bother, we won't make any difference category. I was intrigued at his use of seismic movement as a reason not to be too concerned, because my understanding is that from the sea rise program, the Nelson is sinking enough to double the rate of sea level, the effective rate of sea level rise, but I'm not qualified to really cast a real opinion on that. He had some very interesting things to say about keeping traffic moving. I thought that was well said. He talked about everything from giving better priority to buses to the way we handled the raised platforms at intersections. But ultimately on the budget, he said, unless every country is totally committed, nothing we do will make a difference. Too fatalistic in my book. Next came Sarah Kirby, who I thought was very interesting. She was the one that said we ought to get better at telling stories around climate action. She was strong on investing in infrastructure that makes it easier and cheaper for people to live without cars. And she was strong on climate costs being an investment. So I rated Sarah Kirby's responses. Tillman Walk gave very detailed answers that often didn't answer the question, but still gave some interesting, very technical insights. He had quite a lot to say about energy and in the region, and also about transport ways of getting around. He made interesting comments about saving money at intersections with roundabouts instead of traffic lights, which I think we should take quite seriously. He made several interesting points, but they came across rather as bees in his bonnet rather than being appropriate answers all the way through. But thanks for the response. Dan Robinson's answers, I found they puzzled me a bit. He gave some quite mixed ones of advocating for carrots and sticks, thinking maybe we need big ones, but then being unsure what we were going to use the carrots and sticks for, wanting more information. I've got the feeling that he talked in generalities or answered in generalities, such as, sadly, I think only extreme actions would achieve this goal. Well, okay, what are the extreme actions we need if that's the case? So he had some basic and general suggestions, but it felt like he was a little bit out of touch with the issues and was to some degree winging it. Next up was James Hodson, and James gave one of the most thoughtful set of answers that I received. Having said that, he went through very many different dimensions, But I think very often he devolved almost always to, well, it's about cost. We have to have the factor in transport costs. He was the one that plugged for a wide range of factors to be costed in. But it was also the question of we need cap and trade system and so on. And I think he also saw the issues too much as being other people having to make the running, which I was a bit disappointed, but I liked a lot of what James said otherwise. Next came Mike Ward, and I'm sorry, Mike, but yours was one of the seasoned politicians' answers that didn't answer any of the questions. You just sent me a cutting from something else, which I didn't read. So apologies to you if you thought I should have read it, but you didn't make any effort to answer the questions. Jeremy Matthews is very much in the camp that we're far too small to make a difference, and in essence, we shouldn't bother. He included, for example, mistaken comments like that the 8.3% is an arbitrary target. It is nothing like arbitrary. It is very well founded in science. Jeremy did make good points about our reliance on trucks and the consequences of that, but didn't offer anything as to how we could reduce emissions there. So I found him strong on negative rhetoric, but weak on actual good arguments or answering the question. Lenny Blake, I found ambivalent. He gave quite detailed and thoughtful answers on very narrow aspects of the questions. He seemed to think we should be doing long-term planning, but not now. And he seems to have a very short-term view of what is really the financial impacts of where we're heading. If Lenny ends up in council, then I hope we can benefit from his insights in transport and so on. But also I hope that he gets a better picture on the long-term implications of where the climate is heading. Now we come to Mel Courtney. And Mel, in fairness to you, you are one of the seasoned politicians that did answer the questions. Thank you for that. In terms of community, I like the fact that you were pointing towards a citizens' assembly. I was surprised and a little puzzled by you thinking that the Nelson Tasman Climate Forum should be conducting that. Suggests that that's only about climate, but I think the citizens' assemblies can go much wider than that. You had good things to say about transport and the need for a paradigm shift, and especially that good. And I think also your comments about finances were good. So good on you, Mel, for tackling the question straight up and bringing your experience. Thank you. Steph Phillips brought some very interesting answers, and she joined the dots particularly well between the different aspects of the built environment and transport, made a case for low interest financing to help people make changes. She also realized that we needed to integrate public and private transport and active transport. And Steph was strong on using a climate lens across all decisions and involving the public more in communicating and making those decisions. Matty Anderson brought a fresh perspective with his Pacifica background, and he, for example, he was looking at telling stories that celebrated the successes of our business sectors, seeing schools more as what he called ethical halo communities. And he also touched base on the elephant in the room being several of the pillars of our economy. Others didn't go near to that. He believed in mode shift. He didn't believe in us waiting for the government. He said the government will make a big difference when it gets round to it, but we mustn't wait for them. Until then, we need to be brave. Good on you, Matty, for that. I think you were bringing a valuable perspective. Marie Lindaya's answers blew me away. I thought she brought a terrific holistic perspective, also reflecting an ethnic background, but she embraced Whiria Te Tangata, the Māori concept of weaving the people together, and her answers portrayed that very well. Marie, you also have good environmental and climate awareness that came through in your answers. I hope we see you round the council table. Susa Gould impressed me with the variety of topics she covered in her answers. A little bit of a tendency to focus on outcomes rather than the process to get there, but still some very good integrated thinking going on. A little bit out of touch with some of the things that council could do. For example, she thought they might control vehicle registration, but just the same, I think she's shown an ability to grasp the issues when she has the chance. Last of the regular candidates is Guy Coulson, who emailed me last because he's been involved with climate study out of Nelson for a bit. Guy really impressed me. He's got a long commitment to climate, a good understanding of the issues, and as I said, he's doing a climate qualification. I hope we see him round the council table. And that brings us to the mayoral candidates, and they were received in the order of Richard Osmiston, Nick Smith, and then Aaron Stallard. I had no way of contacting John Wakelin. Many listeners will know Richard Osmiston from his long track record with Money Free New Zealand. And Richard, good on you for keeping pushing your barrow, but you didn't make the connections between your monetary or non-monetary philosophy and the questions that we were trying to answer. Feel that you're doing yourself a disservice by not changing your messaging in some ways, particularly how we might get from here to where you think we should be. Brings us to Nick Smith. His answer to question one was a seasoned politician of not answering the question. He touched on engaging with household and businesses, but the rest of it he wanted to talk about cost. Nick gave quite an integrated answer to the transport question. He is saying he wanted to ensure we invested in all modes of transport, cycleways and new roads and public transport and so on. But I got the feeling he was philosophical just about we're stuck with cars and there's nothing we can do to reduce cars, just get people to change to EVs. And on budgeting, Nick said the challenge is to find the lowest cost way to reduce emissions, but he didn't go into at all the question of the long-term costs, in fact, the catastrophic long-term costs, if we don't. In an era where we have massive climate challenges and a desperate need to do things differently, when Mayor Nick first came to office 3 years ago, I dared to hope that he might be the game changer with his background knowledge and everything. But I'm sorry, Nick, in my book, you're not up to the challenge from a climate perspective. And that leaves us with Aaron Stallard. And when I read Aaron's first answer, it was like a breath of fresh air. I'm going to quote his first sentence. And this is in regard to community engagement. To motivate the community to take action, council first needs to publicly declare its own ambition to fully implement the recently adopted climate change strategy with the goal of becoming a world-leading example of a regional city taking responsible and proportionate climate action. That stood out for me as an example of vision and leadership and a rallying call for our community that we so badly need. He also touches base on things like citizens' assemblies. With regard to transport, he's also similarly holistic, wanting to provide transport choices, use carrots and sticks with all sorts of policies that may affect reducing emissions. In terms of the question of budget allocation, Stallard opened his comment with, first, our climate investment decisions should consider the long term. Good on you, Aaron Stallard, for making sure we don't get trapped in short-termism. He also touched on things like follow a polluter pays principle, a little bit like James Hodgson did. But I would have welcomed just a little more connection with council's current modes of operation, just to sort of tie it all up. True. Well, now to try and sum up in just about a minute that I've got left. First of all, big thanks to all the candidates that responded, whether or not you agreed with the direction of the questions. I have to say there were very few that really felt they had a holistic grasp of the issues, but a lot that showed the capability to develop that. One or two that I thought were off on an unhelpful tangent, let's put it that way. In terms of the regular candidates, the one I would most like to see round the council table would be Guy Coulson from a climate perspective. I also particularly rated Marie Lindea and Matty Anderson. I valued both their climate insights and their holistic perspectives they brought. And I should give Steph Phillips a mention for her ability and insights in connecting the built environment with transport in a community-friendly way. In terms of the mayors, I think I've made it pretty clear where I stand. We're at a time when we absolutely have to do things differently. We need a leader who can champion change and carry the community. I think Mayor Nick had it on a plate for him when he came into office. He's shown himself more stuck in business as usual and more inclined to pour cold water on the new climate strategy than he is to embrace it. Aaron Stallard might not have quite Nick's climate credentials, but boy, he knows his stuff, and he has nailed his colours to the wall in a fashion that I think is really commendable. Anyway, get out and vote. I hope this has been of some help, and I look forward to your company again next week. As you know, Climate Matters is brought to you by Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. Fresh FM broadcasts in Blenheim on 88.9, to Eastern Golden Bay on 95.0, to the Nelson CBD on 107.2, and across the Nelson Tasman region on 104.8. It also streams to the planet on freshfm.co.nz, and podcasts of Climate Matters and of other locally produced shows are available through freshfm.co.nz and through the accessmedia.nz app. Well, I hope you got something out of that. Thank you for your company. I hope I enjoy it again next week. And of course, as always, kia kaha for the climate.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.